Hi, y'all, and welcome to the Daily Soundbite. I'm your host, Jen Karami. For the next 20 minutes, I will take you through the important stories of the week. The U District gets a new food bank. The Daily gets an edgy new science section. And an editorial on materialism, or anti-materialism. All to come in the Daily Soundbite. You know the U District Food Bank? The tiny one on 50th that always has the line out the door? Well, it's getting revamped. The new project is called the University Commons, and it's breaking ground down the street on Roosevelt Way. Kate Clark has the details.
I'm Kate Clark, the news editor. They just started breaking ground on the project about a month ago. It's going to be an apartment complex on Roosevelt Way that's going to have 20 units be allocated toward low-income university district residents. So on the first floor of the building, there's going to be space for the University District Food Bank, which is currently located just off the Ave at the bottom of the church. Anyone that goes to UW passes by it all the time. Based on like the interviews I did with people who work there, it's just like way too small, it's hot. And they serve up to 200 people a day, so it really is just, it's not enough space. They're growing, they need more space. They are one of the most frequented food banks in the city. So they'll be moving into this space in the University Commons, which will be great for them. They're gonna have, I think, more than twice the amount of space they have now. They'll also have better food. They're gonna have a program that teaches low-income people to be baristas, and they'll have them working there. So that's an awesome part of the space as well.
So yeah. Coffee shop, food bank.
Yeah.
And apartment.
Yeah, so there's 49 units total. So 20 of the spaces will go to former homeless young adults ages 18 to 24. And the other 29 studios will be for low-wage workers. All of them will be for low-income people, but a large portion will be for former homeless. So that's a really awesome thing that would be great to have in more apartments in the district, which doesn't happen often. So it's a great step in the right direction. Mayor Ed Murray released the housing affordability livability plan. And I don't think, because this is already happening, I don't think it is actually related, but I think more of these things will happen. The U District could go any number of ways. It could go if upzoning, which is when they start to build up and they allow buildings to be bigger. If that is allowed, it becomes allowed in the U District, we're going to see some probably negative changes, at least in my opinion. We're going to see the U District look a lot more like South Lake Union, which if you've been there, it's like very fancy, it's very nice, it's very expensive. I'm hoping we go in the opposite direction, which would be forcing new apartment complexes to have units that are allocated specifically for low-income residents.
Well, I mean, don't those maybe like go hand in hand, would be like building more apartments, higher apartments, so that we can fit more people in the industry?
Yeah, they do. They definitely do, and they can, but they also, like, they might build, you know, great, beautiful, expensive apartments, and they may not have any that are allocated toward low income. They may all just be market rate, which is high, which is too high for me to pay. It's too high for most college students to pay. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, and it's nothing that will happen in the immediate future. It's going to be kind of a long, slow process that we'll just kind of watch unfold.
Part 2, Moment of Science. Science is one of the most overlooked areas of journalism, not because it isn't interesting, but because it's technical and hard to boil down complex concepts into layman's terms without oversimplifying them. During interviews, journalists have to ask scientists to please explain it like I'm 8 years old. Readers might ask, what does nuclear fission have to do with my life? Moment of Science is a new column in the Daily Science section. The goal is to bridge the gap between hard science and social science.
Yes, my name is Arunab Satpathy, and I am the science editor for the Daily. My personal belief has always been that science often offers a very authoritative voice on most issues, and this includes social issues. And many of these social issues are explicitly scientific, for instance, the issue of climate change. So Moment of Science essentially aims to explore that area. See, the thing is that, you know, whenever I've read the science section in the Daily, I get the impression that, you know, only hardcore science people will be wanting to read it. And I wanted to change that, and I was looking for a way for a new column. The earlier column that occupied this space was called Campus Pulse, and it was essentially about just like a short bulletin about the research that's going on. I'm not sure many people would want to read that. So I wanted to start something that was very Seattle in the sense that Seattle is very social justice oriented. So all social issues, I wanted to bring science into it because it offers an authoritative voice this summer. So I hope to write about to have someone write about the evolutionary origins of homosexuality. Next week, hopefully, we're getting someone to write about the myth of left and right hemispheres in the brain. You know, you say a left brain or a right brain individual. And so this week, we started with the question of whether or not climate change is natural or man-made.
Do you think that there are some topics that lend themselves better to this column? And do you think there's any topics that you can't do them because they're too technical, maybe?
Broadly speaking, most scientific issues can sort of be, you know, they can be broken down and simplified. Nuclear fusion is a very technical field, but you can simplify it and talk about like the advantages. I think most of the areas where this column cannot go are some of the taboo areas of science, like research stuff that is a valid scientific question. But it would not be legitimate to actually explore it currently because of the social reaction to it.
What, like assisted suicide?
Maybe. I wouldn't mind doing that. I would absolutely go for that. I'm talking about more like one of the things that I was considering, but I stopped myself from doing was how patterns in behavior is related to gender are affected in science. Initially, the suggestion was by one of the writers was that why don't we explore, there was this Nobel Prize winning physicist recently who said that, women, you fall in love with women in the lab and they cry and stuff like that. So the suggestion that was made is that could we explore this as a scientific question, not that they cry, but how is the presence of women in the lab, does it improve performance? How does it affect the performance of a laboratory? How does it affect science in general?
I'm surprised that you can't write about that. You think that's too controversial?
The Daily has already been embroiled in controversy before. That was about homosexuality. So, I mean, hot button issues definitely are problematic and very emotional. But still, I mean, the questions are worth exploring, I think.
Maybe what you're saying is like, it would be kind of like anti-feminist.
The thing is that I don't think the questions are anti-feminist, but it could be construed that way.
I mean, I think if it has a scientific basis, like, it's valid.
It would be interesting. Not in particular, I should, you know, emphasize that not in particular whether women cry in the laboratory, but the effect of having like, mixed gender laboratories, for instance.
Well, absolutely.
Do women bring a specific perspective which is interesting and new? Does it really actually affect the way research is conducted? Does it improve it? How does it improve it? At least in the past, it was the case that a lot of work by women scientists was appropriated by men, which sucked. I found out, I was doing research, and I found out that the person who actually discovered the structure of DNA was most likely a woman and not a man. James Watson and Francis Crick took the credit for it. But it was by a lady called, I think her name was Rosalind Franklin. But yes, I mean, I digress. But yes, in short, yes, there are questions that need to be explored.
Can you tell me a little bit about the article that ran this week, the first one?
Uh-huh. The article that was written this week was about whether or not, the question that we posed was whether or not climate change is natural or man-made. When I started this column, I made it clear to my writers that what I'd really wanted is that for us to tackle a broad topic, but ask a very specific question and then explore it. This week it was written, it was an excellent article as it turned out, was written by Zoha Sayed, who is in New York right now. She essentially conducted interviews with various climate change scientists and also interviewed one student and basically, you know, came away with the conclusion that while in some local areas such as, for instance, in the Pacific Northwest, climate change can be affected by local climatic conditions. On the whole, the kind of climate change that we are seeing is most definitely being caused by humans. Whoever's listening to this podcast, they should check out Moment of Science. I hope to get a lot of interaction with this, and I'm hoping that I'll get a few angry and a few happy emails.
Part 3. Anti-materialism and practicing what we preach. This week's opinion section focused on materialism, the great catch-22 of America. We all like to think we're not materialistic. It's even becoming pretty trendy. But it's hard to leave the house without buying things. And the things we do buy are disposable. Even an expensive iPhone might only stick around for a few years before we decide it's time for an upgrade. So what does materialism look like? Is it necessarily a bad thing? And is it unavoidable?
I'm Rebecca Gross, and I'm a writer for the Opinion and Arts and Leisure sections. And I just sort of was thinking about it one day and how frustrated I was that everything I did had to, you know, feed into this materialism positive feedback loop. Like, everything I bought was going toward a bigger system of materialistic and capitalist goals. So I was frustrated by that, and I recalled a quote that my dad had said to me when I was really little that was, "Cry over people, don't cry over things." And I was thinking about it and playing it over and over in my head, and I was just frustrated that I see so many people who cry over things, and, you know, metaphorically or physically even, like, people get upset when their phones break and when, you know, they don't have enough money to buy something they really want. And kind of that's what the train of thought was with the article. I wanted to challenge that and say, you know, that's not what we should be doing. We should be putting people as our main priority and humanity as our main priority.
Like, even if you're not getting upset sometimes, I feel like it's really hard to avoid, like, that underlying feeling of always having to buy something. Like, I feel like I can't go out without buying something because there's just things to buy everywhere.
It's so ingrained in our society now that it's like, if you go out for to lunch with someone, you know, you obviously, you're not going to, like, bring your own lunch that you farmed at your house. Like, you're going to go buy lunch with someone. It's just the way that we've kind of made things work, and it's not really anyone's fault, but it's obviously difficult to challenge that.
I noticed you also said that right now it's trendy to kind of be, like, anti-materialist, but yeah, people don't always practice what they preach.
You know, people wear, like, lots of natural clothes and are really into buying natural food, and even in Seattle, I really notice it a lot, and I don't think it's, like, fake or anything. You know, I think people actually don't want to be part of this, you know, cycle the same way that I do, but it's becoming trendy to even, like, go out to, you know, Free People, for example, and buy something that looks like you made it at home and then wear that. And it's like, that's, again, just feeding into this loop. I feel like the only way that this could really be changed is if we, you know, really do start making some of our own clothes or starting gardens in our homes and making our own food that way.
What if you were gonna buy, like, an expensive cashmere sweater, but you'll use it all the time, as opposed to, like, buying a polyester sweater? For me, sometimes I'm like, I used to buy a lot more things. I mean, they're always cheaper things, but I'd be buying them constantly. And I feel like lately, like, I'll splurge on something, but it'll be, like good quality, and then I'll just use that for a long time, and I get a lot more use out of it. What do you think of that?
You know, if you're buying one cashmere sweater and it's going to last you 3 winters and you're going to wear it a couple times a week, like, I think that that's better than going to a store and buying 10 polyester sweaters and maybe wearing them once in a while because you really like the one more expensive sweater you have or something. But then again, like, at the same time, you know, it's not even as material, like, you're buying less in the long run. So it still also plays into the being less materialistic, which is good.
And it is hard to get out of that loop because, like, I'm just thinking when you're saying, like, oh, we can make our own clothes, like, I'd love to make my own clothes, but I don't have the time as it is, you know? So it's kind of that whole, like, we work so much that we don't have time to invest in making our own things.
We need to work enough so that we can buy more things, because we do need things, you know? It's just, it's hard, and then you don't have enough time to compensate for the things you need.
I guess my question is, like, on the other end of that, is there something wrong with wanting nice things if you can afford it?
In a capitalist world, it makes sense to want things, and it actually helps the economy when people buy things. But then again, on the other side, I think that, you know, walking down the street, in the U District even, there's a ton of people who are homeless, who are begging for money, and really do just need it for food. And we're so caught up in, you know, we need to keep our money. We need to hold on to it so that we'll be secure, so that we can buy things for ourselves. And my question, you know, to challenge that is, what is that going to do? Like, isn't the whole purpose of, like, living in this world to make connections with people? You know, when you are going to buy that extra thing that maybe we need or don't need, just think to yourself once or twice more, you know, how was this made? Where was this made? What else could I be putting my money to right now that could be furthering humanity rather than just, like, your own personal desire to buy something? And I think that if everyone just thinks a little bit more when buying things, it could really change a lot.
Tune in to The Daily's Soundbite at soundcloud.com/thedaily or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Pick up a new copy of The Daily Summer Edition every Wednesday on newsstands, or just read it online at dailyuw.com. And yes, The Daily is actually a weekly over the summer. I'm Jen Karami. Thanks for listening, and go Dawgs!